This is Identity at the Center.
If it has anything to do with IAM, this is the go-to podcast. Now your hosts, Jim McDonald and Jeff Stedman.
All right. Can everybody hear me? Okay, good. Welcome to a special Authenticate 2023 edition of the Identity at the Center podcast. I'm Jeff, and that's Jim. Hey, Jim.
Hey, Jeff. How are you?
Oh, not so bad. Yourself?
I'm doing great. Normally in the podcast, is that where I start out with a complaint? I don't have one.
That's unlike you.
I know. Well, I mean, the pool's great. The weather's great. Passwords stink, but pass keys are great.
Yeah. So you found something to complain about right there.
I snuck that in.
So this is the first time we've done something like this where we got up on the main stage. Usually we're tucked away in a corner somewhere where we're not visible because we have faces for radio and we have voices for a silent movie. So we try to keep it simple here. So far, the best part of this conference has to definitely be, I can't see him, but Nick, the guy on the Segway with the camera. That guy's awesome. He's here, I think, for the last couple years. Andrew, it's at least a couple years, right? Yeah, okay. So that guy's awesome. He's like, when we're talking superheroes for Authenticate, I think he should get like an honorable mention for that as well. People are probably wondering, you know, what is this session about? It seems like everybody left, which is fine. This is really a conversation around identity that we're going to be having. So what we do from a podcast perspective at the Identity Center is we started this about 4.5 years ago. It's a side project that Jim and I have been working on for that long. And we put out weekly episodes, got thousands of listeners around the world, hopefully some friendly faces and ears in here as well. And yeah, it's something that we do weekly. Anything you want to add, Jim?
It's just grown so much. You know, you mentioned thousands of listeners around the globe. I remember the first episode, we had 25 downloads. We knew who all those people were.
That was 20 of them.
Yeah, and now we're up to like episode 238.
238 went live this morning, so we're technically competing with ourselves as we're doing this at the same time. Yeah. What do you do during the day, Jim?
I am an identity advisory practice consultant.
I lead an identity practice. We both work for a company called RSM, fifth largest consulting firm in the U.S. Jim and I have been working together for 8 years. This is something that, again, kind of a labor of love for us. What we do want to talk about today, though, is FIDO authentication. We've got a plethora of identity product managers who are going to join us up on the stage here in a second. So I'm going to go ahead and introduce them now, and they'll come back from backstage. We've got Daniel Gruby from TikTok, Christian Brand from Google, and Mahender Madhavan from eBay. So give them a round of applause as they're walking up here.
Gotta give them the Arsenio Hall.
Right. That shows our age by doing that.
Yeah.
Right? all right, so I know we're kind of running, you know, weirdly on time schedule, so we're gonna kind of jump right into it, guys. You guys are all product managers from an identity perspective. Tell us a little bit about your roles, and Mahender, why don't we start with you? Just briefly describe what your role is.
Sure. Hi, everyone. I lead authentication product at eBay. I've been working in the identity industry for almost a decade now. Huge shout out to my engineers, UX designers, and architects and data analysts, who are, some of them are sitting right here. And yeah, that's me.
Great. Happy to go next. Hi, folks. I'm Christian. I've been working on PASCI and FIDO-related efforts for about a decade. Also, I'll give a shout out to the team. We have a lot of Googlers here this week. We've been working towards getting passkeys out for Google accounts for a long time. Earlier this year, as Andrew mentioned, in May, we finally made it available as an elective, like as an elective flow, as an option for users to try and play with. And then earlier this month, I believe just last week on Tuesday, we announced that we are going to start making passkeys the default option for users. So actually today, I'm sorry I'm taking too long, but I will say this one thing. Today, if you do a web search, in Google search, on macOS, iOS, and other places, you should start seeing a nudge on Google search to start using passkeys.
Woo-hoo. All right. Daniel, that's what we talked to follow up with, but go for it.
So my name is Daniel Gruby, and I am a product manager on our account platform team at TikTok. And I focus specifically on account security, but we work on everything from signing up, the new user journey, as well as logging in. Yeah, and similarly, TikTok has now launched passkeys globally on iOS, which is really exciting as our first kind of step into passkeys. You know, and we have a future roadmap as well, which we're excited to share with everyone.
And hey, Mahindar, eBay started with WebAuthn very early. Why is that?
So at eBay, you know, we take pride in building magical experiences for our customers and putting our customer first. I would say two things help with you know, starting WebAuthn. One is clearly articulating the benefits of, I would say, usability and security that WebAuthn provided at that point in time. So, you know, reducing friction is going to help build the business or enable the business, and improving security is going to build trust on the marketplace and helps, you know, hence helps with customer retention as well. The second aspect would be that eBay is also an early adopter of FIDO UAF. We built native biometrics way back in time, so WebAuthn and even passkeys and passwordless is a natural continuation to that.
Christian, you just kind of teased the announcement that Google made about passkeys by default. I'm curious, you know, I've been a supporter of that for a while. I've frequently pointed to Google on our show about passkey adoption and how easy it was. What drove that decision to make that announcement? I think it was last week, to say, hey, now by default, we're using passkeys as our primary authentication.
Yeah, that's a great question. So, I mean, at Google, we're extremely data-driven. So everything we do is usually based on numbers or metrics. It was a calculated decision earlier this year when we started in May to roll out passkeys. We wanted to really do two things, right? Overnight adoption was not the goal. Primary goal was to show the rest of the world that this technology is ready for prime time, right? We're willing to essentially subject our users to the passkey experience if they choose to, you know, take up the challenge, essentially. The goal was not to get hundreds of millions of users overnight. We wanted to start, you know, showing the world, showing developers, showing other companies that the technology is ready. But the second part of this was we wanted to start getting data, right? We wanted to start having a set of users who self-selected. So if something goes off the rails, these users know where to turn it on and turn it off. Luckily, nothing went off the rails, so I'll kind of like, you know, preface that. But start to get data, right? So we were gathering data for the last, I think, about 5 months. We feel like we have enough data to show us what works, what still needs more work. And again, you know, happy to go into some details at some point, but for now, suffice to say, we think the experience is on par from a reliability perspective with other types of technologies we allow during sign-in, but more importantly, passkeys are easier to use for users, and we have some survey results that I think we also made available as part of these blog posts. Users find passkeys easier to use. The perception is that they're more secure, which of course is correct, and in general, we're just trying to move the world to a space where we're saying, don't hide your passkey support behind, you know, three clicks in some account settings. And I know that made sense, right? That's what we did as well. You can actually start to subject users to this front and center. Even users who've never heard the term passkey, we think the technology is at the point in most of the flows where users can start seeing this and intuitively understand what they need to do.
Daniel, you're with TikTok. First off, do you do the dances? Second off, you know, you guys are kind of newcomers to FIDO. Why jump in now?
Sure, yeah. To answer your first question, no, I don't do the dances. I'm not a dancer. But second, yeah, so why now? I think why not now, right? The technology has obviously been adopted by a lot of big players in the industry, and TikTok wants to be a part of that. I think that what we know at TikTok is that one, like you said, we want a user-friendly but most secure login experience. The second thing is we know that TikTok has a lot of login options, right? You can log into TikTok with a password, with an SMS OTP code, a third-party option. We want to make sure that with this plethora of options that we also reduce the risk of all of those at the same time. Offering users a passkey does that in a user-friendly way, especially with the way that we implemented it, which upsells passkey as the primary login method for users who created it. And then the last one is essentially that TikTok had already invested in FIDO2 internally. We wanted to expand that investment to make sure that the most secure login methods that we offer to our employees are also offered to our users on the platform. So really creating consistency there as well is important.
So how did you handle communicating passkeys to your end users?
Yeah, of course. I think one of the biggest considerations, especially, you know, at a social media company like TikTok, where you have a lot of young users and things like that, Are they really going to understand the technical architecture of what is a passkey, things like that? Even asking my own friends, I was like, hey, you know, let's test this out. What do you guys think? They're like, oh, I already do this every day in all my banking apps. You know, I use my face to log in. I'm like, that's not really what this is, but that's fine. So we found that, and similar to what the UX guidelines from FIDO say, is that if you help users to understand or play off what they think is happening, this really can help adoption and increase popularity of it. So playing off things like Face ID, Touch ID as ways to log in, and using that to communicate to users of this new login method will really help with adoption and popularity.
I'm curious, because it's not always happy path, right? There's things that go wrong, things that could be better. Are there things that were discovered that you consider, you know, roadblocks or things that still need to be worked out? I don't know, Mahender or Christian or Daniel, whoever wants to take that one.
I mean, I'm happy to start.
Okay.
I think there are many rough edges, right? But I think it really depends on user flows. There are certain flows that work beautifully. Take the same device flow, for example, right? If you have a passkey available on the device that you're on, all you have to do is show your face and touch your fingerprint. I mean, there is no dispute there, right? That experience is much better, much easier than using a password and other forms of second factor, which usually accompanies that password with sensitive logins. When you do not have a passkey on the machine, we have two challenges, right? The one challenge is a technical challenge. Does the protocol work reliably? There is Bluetooth involved, there is network communications involved, there is the scanning of a QR code involved in some cases. So that's one challenge. There is a second challenge, which is users just don't get that flow yet, right? They don't understand necessarily. We're thinking that post-COVID, like lots of users, especially in the US, used to scanning QR codes because we've seen them on menus and other places for a long time. That doesn't necessarily translate to other places in the world, and even in the US, users are sometimes used to scanning these QR codes with certain apps, and certain phones don't really understand them that well. So I think there is really a user behavior issue, and then there is a technical issue. On the technical front, we're doing a lot of work, and I think, you know, everyone involved here, and I see a lot of familiar faces involved in that, you know, process is doing a fantastic job, and we're pushing the technology forward. We're, you know, sanding down these rough edges, and yes, we are at a point where we can start to subject users to these flows, although I think that's where I would say the elective portion still comes in. I don't think we want to put that front and center for every user. If you take these side by side, entering a password, scanning a QR code, and going through that process, most users will still tell you, actually, you know what, my password is probably easier. It's not secure, but it's easier, right? We need to move the needle so that the QR code flow becomes second nature. And that kind of brings me to the second point, which is, who's going to take that first plunge to put their, you know, 100 million or a billion users through QR code scans rather than doing passwords, right? I think that is where we are saying, you know, with our elective or the by default kind of approach that we've taken, let's do that where it makes sense. Let's do that for the same device passkey flows, and that's what we're doubling down on right now. Whereas the QR code flow remains an option for users, and we want to gradually turn that volume upwards with the rest of industry. And that's why it's so important also to have my, you know, partners here with us on stage, because I don't think passkeys is something that one company can take forward and make a success. We need the industry to show users that is how we are going to work with this going forward. Scanning a QR code is certainly easier than opening a password manager on your phone and retyping a complex password. So I do think we need to kind of like push users to understand why these flows might be easier to use than the status quo, but it'll take industry, I guess, participation to really move that.
Yeah, I'd like to add to that as well. So I broadly see three categories, three roadblocks, right? One is user awareness. Passwords are still common. Password managers are common too. You know, at eBay, if you look at it, users don't see authentication as a thing that they need to do. They worry about buying and selling. Same applies to Google. Like they just want to search TikTok. You know, they want to make videos, right? Authentication is the last thing that they worry about, right? So to be able to create a smart contextual authentication that works seamlessly across devices is of paramount importance, I would say. So the second roadblock is the you know, across devices, right? Passkeys or any technology needs to work like how password managers work. You go to any device, you should be able to use, right? So interoperability becomes a key here. We've seen some of with eBay data as well. Users enroll into these passwordless methods, but then they get a new device or they go to a new device and then they are back to passwords. So I would say these are the, you know,
two or three roadblocks that we encountered at eBay as well.
So it wouldn't be an episode of Identity at the Center if we didn't talk about AI. We jokingly call it AI
at the center
sometimes. How do you guys see AI impacting authentication going forward? Daniel, we'll start with you.
Yeah, sure. So I think that the way I view authentication in our journey, right, is before someone logs in, when they are already logged in, and then after they've completely lost access from their account. In the first two scenarios, the way that AI has helped us already, honestly, and the way that it will continue to help us is to look at aberrations in users' behavior. We can map out, you know, what we expect from a user when they're logging in, when they're already in an account, and then understand when that can change. That can help provide us, especially with passkey, right? If users, you know, use a passkey to log in most of the time, we'll know when they don't. And it makes, as we heard earlier today, passwords or other methods more risky as a login. And that can be another signal we use to understand as a behavior aberration. The other way that we look at it is when a user has completely lost access to their account, how do we authenticate their identity and get them back in? Let's say they deleted their passkey, right? They have no other login method on their account. How do we know that this is the authentic owner? For you know companies that are in social media, there are a couple different challenges to this. There's AI around biometric authentication that you can use, obviously. There are always compliance issues around that. But also with social media, you don't always have to be your authentic self. So biometrics are not always going to work, right?
Wait, what?
What? I know. Surprise, everyone. You can be whoever you want online. But basically, for some companies, you know, like Facebook, there's a soft requirement that you have to be yourself on Facebook. At other companies like Instagram or, you know, TikTok, you can have a pet account, a meme account, really anything you want, right? And how do we know that this is you, especially if we've lost all other authentication methods? And I think that's really where I'm curious to see how AI can help us in the future as well.
Mahender?
Yeah, I think AI works both ways. The good side of it is it can help personalize and, you know, secure authentication. You know, Gen AI can start, you know, authenticating users through natural conversations, right? You have zero trust security that is coming up where AI plays a big role as well. But if you look at the flip side of it, I mean, we saw a lot of keynote speakers talk about, you know, AI used for hacking and, you know, taking users' credentials. I think, you know, the future of how AI would help, you know, technology like passkeys would be in distinguishing between, I would say, real humans and AI bot that's coming to attack. I think that's where the industry is going forward, is what I would like to add to what Daniel said.
Hey, Christian, feel free to add in on AI, but I also want to know, what's next after passkeys?
That's great, because I think that question addresses the first one as well. So I want to add on to what Daniel Mahendra said, not to repeat that. I think at Google, we have a slightly, I don't want to say a different responsibility, but almost like more responsibility, if you think about it. Your Google account is also where a lot of your passkeys are going to end up. Google is the root store for a lot of passkeys for users. If you're an Android user by default, your passkeys for other services will go to your Google account. That's where we keep them for you. So when you buy a new phone or when you change devices, you get access to your passkeys again. That all makes sense, right? The challenge is, if you are a single device user, and we have a lot of single device users in the world, if you break your phone or you lose it, or you have to sell one phone to buy your next one, which a lot of users have to do in some territories, some countries, how do you get back into your Google account with a passkey if your passkey is stored on your phone? Big challenge, right? Huge issue. Today, we fall back to other forms of authentication for that. Passwords, SMS, you know, sending a prompt to an email address, whatever. Most of these technologies really don't work at scale, and they don't work at the level of security where we want passkeys to be. What we have started to look at, and what not only us, I recently went on a trip to China, and I had to activate WeChat, and WeChat uses remote facial recognition. That's how you authenticate your payment profile. Actually work remarkably well. However, there's a lot of, you know, concerns around like remote biometrics. And I know that's one of the things which at FIDO we kind of like claim. I mean, the whole point is everything is local, right? Your biometrics remain local to your device. So it's great on the privacy front. The problem is, if you need to authenticate a user back into their account, think of account recovery, what do you use? Remote biometrics is a potential solution. However, if you think about remote biometrics, what are they? Like, it is maybe remote facial recognition, it's remote voice recognition. If we think back at Rachel's presentation this morning, GenAI has made this stuff, you know, untrustable. It's not really trustworthy anymore, right? If I'm able to create a, at least today, two-dimensional picture of a user, mostly these remote matching stuff is all two-dimensional, that's a challenge. Voice recognition, again, another challenge. I know there's a lot of financial institutions who sunk a lot of money into remote voice recognition features. I'm not quite sure that we are going to be able to keep up with the rate of advances there in order to get that technology to a point where it can detect that this is an electronically altered or a generated, you know, piece of media. That is what bothers me a little bit. So we're starting to think at Google, how do we solve this account recovery problem? We have a couple of ideas. We're working on a whole bunch of things right now, but AI is really throwing a bit of a spanner in the works in some of these.
Great answer.
The unhappy path is something we see exploited quite a bit. I think we saw it recently with events in Vegas. We're running short on time, but we always try to carve out some time to end on a lighter note. This is where we just have some fun. Not necessarily identity related, something that we can just kind of goof off around. What we typically do is we'll ask our guests hobbies, things they do outside of Identity, et cetera. So we've kind of tailored a few different questions here. Daniel, I'm going to start with you. So I've come up with this exciting scenario for you. If you had to perform one song to go viral on TikTok, and if you nailed it, everybody would suddenly be enrolled in passkeys for all their accounts, what would you sing or perform?
Sure, probably Who Are You by The Who. I think it's the most punny of answers I could give.
Clever.
but for context, I grew up performing, singing. I was trained in opera randomly. I used to live in Paris. I sang in the Paris Opera when I was there. I led an a cappella group, composed all those songs. I was in a band in Austin for a long time when I lived there. Way too many moments on stage performing. So the one song I did love to sing the most, though, was Somebody to Love by Queen. That was always a lot of fun.
Queen's very a hit fun. In every bar, right? I
mean, right? Yeah. Kind of so maybe that one instead.
You must be a karaoke superstar.
Let's all go after this.
Well, we have no? mics if you wanted to sing something.
I know, right?
Mahendar, you and I have a shared experience. We're in that 1% of humanity that has gone to the top of Half Dome in Yosemite National Park. Yeah, really awesome. Describe that experience for us.
It was nerve-wracking, I should say the least. I'm not fit, you can look at me, right? And I was like, let's go do Half Dome with my friend, and we started at 3 a.m. We probably saw a bear, or we think we saw a bear, we don't know. We climbed up, I think, till then it was fine. Like, we took 6 hours, 6.5 hours to climb up the Half Dome. We finished all our water, right? And coming back down was a pain. I mean, I cannot explain. it's easier to implement passkeys than climb Half Dome, I would say that.
That's a professional tie-in. You should do a podcast. Christian, you have a variety of interests. You've learned to play guitar, you're learning golf, and obviously you're in digital identity. Of those three things, which is the hardest?
Oh, that's a great question. First, before that, I just want to tell Daniel, we've done karaoke at 7 out of the last 7 Fido plenaries, so okay. we'll hook you up.
The gauntlet has been thrown down.
Absolutely. It's interesting, right? I think golf takes a lot of time, right? It's 4 hours essentially for me to play 18, which takes me away from the house for a lot. So it's hard to invest proper time in that. Guitar, you can become mediocre or kind of like help yourself to the point that you wouldn't embarrass yourself if you have to play a song. I think much quicker than with necessarily, working in the identity space. Like, I feel like identity is almost like binary, right? You're either, don't really get the principles and you're not really, I guess, part of the solution until you really can contribute. There's just so much happening in this space. It's so fast moving. Not to discourage anyone from participating in the field, of course, but I think there's such a lot going on. And if you are disconnected and you're not staying on top of things for 3 months, the world has changed so much that you almost have to, I don't want to say relearn. So I feel like, playing golf and playing the guitar, I enjoy because it's kind of like riding a bike. Once you have the skills, you retain them. Today, 10 years from now, you can probably still pick it up and help yourself. versus the identity space, which is just so fast changing. So again, I'd say identity certainly the hardest thing that I'm involved in right now. Do enjoy golf, but I will say picking up the guitar and being able to just, you know, do something for 5 minutes is one of the reasons why I love that instrument.
One of the things I like about the identity industry is just when you think you know what you're doing, you don't. The ID Pro organization, and I think I saw Ian here somewhere, he might have stepped out, and I'm probably butchered the stat, but there's an annual report that comes out every year of skill survey, and they talk about, you know, when did you feel most comfortable in identity? And the number has changed over the years, but I remember seeing, and I think it was a couple years ago, it was 10 years. 10 years of identity and access management experience is when you start to think you know what you're doing. I would encourage folks, reach out, talk to people. There's lots of good resources. It's been a great industry to work in for a lot of folks, but we're gonna go ahead and start to wrap things up. I think it was mentioned earlier, there's a expo hall just next door. Make sure that you go out and check out. There's a lot of good solutions out there. The challenge is there's a lot of good solutions out there, so you have to try and find the right fit for your organizations. And we're gonna be podcasting in Eclipse 2, which is sort of behind the expo in the hallway there. So we have an episode later this afternoon that we're gonna be recording, as well as pretty much all day tomorrow. So feel free to come in, drop in, check us out what we do. They will be longer shows as we sort of normally would do it. And if you like what you heard, idacpodcast.com, subscribe. It's a two-man operation, it's literally just Jim and I. And we do this every week, vendor-neutral conversations. Want to give a round of applause to our guests here on the stage. Thank you so much for joining us. And we're going to go ahead and thank also Megan, Andrew, and Adrian for helping make this happen. So this is a highlight for us on the show to be able to be up on a stage like this and just have this conversation. So want to give Andrew an opportunity to come up, or maybe it's Megan, to make a quick announcement. We'll go ahead and play our outro music and say, okay, we're pretty much it and that's done. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk with everybody in the next one.
You've been listening to Identity at the Center. We hope you've enjoyed the show. Make sure to like, rate, and review. And we'll be back soon. But in the meantime, hit the website at identityatthecenter.com and find us on Twitter at IDAC Podcast. See you next time on Identity at the Center.